Welcome to the Tokyo Lens podcast, and as always, if you are a regular listener, welcome back. A few years ago, before I was really doing any content creation, I had a YouTube channel up. I wasn't really a YouTuber by se. I had a friend named Matt back in Canada say to me, "It would mean the world to me if you'd put together a little video on autumn in Tokyo, specifically on October in Tokyo, because October is my favorite month and I'd love to know what it's like." So I just grabbed my iPhone, I walked around Ueno Park and a few other places, and I put together this little video. Since doing that, I've started to realize that October is a wildly, wildly popular month for people to come to Japan. And so today's episode, while it may not be a long episode, will hopefully be an episode chock full of value. Obviously, I want to talk about October in Tokyo. We'll sprinkle in a little bit of stuff, you know, autumn in Japan in general. I think I said October in Tokyo, but I meant October in Japan. Still stuck on that video title. So, first and foremost, he's right. October is a spectacular month. The weather is generally really good. It's very bearable. If you don't know, Japanese summers tend to go a little over the top with humidity. And if you're not dealing with humidity, just the sounds of the summer, while pleasant, can be overwhelming at times. The cicadas screaming in the background is just, at the beginning of summer, you're like, oh, it's really nice. The cicadas are, I'm so happy. And by the end, you're just trying to find one quiet spot anywhere in Japan and unable to do it. So when early fall hits, it is an absolute treat. The humidity dies down, the heat dies down right after the period of time in, you know, August, September, where all the typhoons hit, which isn't exactly, you know, the most fun in the world. Right after that is October. And in October, all of that just starts to go away, and you have a month where the temperatures are just right, where the atmosphere is just right, and where there is just enough going on to make it really enjoyable without being like, oh my God, there's too much happening. What do I do? May and June and all of those are really, there is so much going on, I don't know what to do month, but October is really nice. So super long intro to this aside, let's jump right into the content. So I want to start by talking a little bit about temperature. When doing the Q&A episode previously, I got a lot of questions about, you know, if I'm coming to Japan during the fall, what kind of temperatures should I expect? What kind of clothing should I wear, etc.? Now, September, you'll usually find temperatures, this year was a little hotter than usual, but you usually get somewhere between like 23 to 28 degrees Celsius. I think that's like 73 to 82 Fahrenheit in the afternoon, and it gets a little cooler in the evening. This year was much hotter than that. We had plenty of days over 30 degrees. In October, you're generally looking anywhere in the range from about 19 degrees Celsius or around 66 Fahrenheit up to around 28. More averaging, probably I'd say around 25 is safe, and 28 is something like, I don't know, 80, 82. Maybe 75 is normal. I'm new to this Fahrenheit game, so I'm shooting in the dark here. In November, you're going to look anywhere from, I'd say, probably 14, 15 degrees up to around 20 degrees. So maybe like 56, 57 to somewhere around 64, 65. And of course, morning and evening temperatures are going to dip below that. So in terms of what to wear, it really depends on the climate you're coming from. Like for me as a Canadian, any one of those is t-shirt weather. Like absolutely. Like as we get into November, it might be like, okay, I'll toss on a hoodie over that, like a light jacket, something I can zip up and take off or roll the sleeves up of. But I don't own any real like long sleeve shirts. This has been a problem for me every single year. I think I own a total of 3 long sleeve shirts that aren't button up, like a plaid shirt or something. And every year when the cold snap finally does hit, I'm like, I did it again. I've got nothing to wear under things. But the easiest way is just dress in layers. All of that aside, that pretty much covers what to wear and what to expect. Some people were like, well, what kind of shoes do I bring? And it's not really that rainy, but again, with the way the climate has been lately, all the changes we've been seeing, this has been one of the hottest and most definitely one of the wettest years I have ever experienced in my time in Japan. This year, the rainy season hit right at the beginning of June and just never stopped. The rainy season just never went away. And so I would like to say that you're probably not going to be coming to Japan and hit with a bunch of rain, but you might be. Now, the biggest highlight, right at the top of the roll, every single time in Japan, is the autumn leaves. Now, Japan has no shortage of incredible spots to see the autumn leaves. I cannot express this enough. Even in Tokyo, there are going to be wonderful, wonderful spots. Like Akihabara looks fantastic with the autumn leaves. Areas like Omotesando look beautiful with the autumn leaves. If you go just out to West Tokyo, you'll find gorgeous spots like Sagamihara or even Mount Takao is another wonderful spot nearby. If you were to go out to Ibaraki and hit areas like Mount Tsukuba, again, beautiful spots. Now, there are really typical popular areas like Nikko. Nikko is a really, really good spot, and it's still very, very much undervalued, by the way. I think a lot of people this year are going to be flooding to Kyoto. Kyoto is still in the midst of a massive tourism boom, and I guarantee you that getting caught up in that will decrease your fun more than it will increase it. If you've never been to Kyoto and you absolutely, positively insist on going, my number one pro tip for you is wake up unbelievably early. Get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not joking, and I literally mean get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, get up before the sun rises, rent a bicycle, avoid the public transportation if at all possible. Like, if you have a healthy body and you can get around, I do understand and respect that not everybody does, but if it's an option for you, definitely rent a bicycle. Now, this will enable you to get out and see certain places without having to fight all the crowds, especially areas like Fushimi Inari, the temple, or I should say shrine, with all the red torii gates going up the mountain is so beautiful for sunrise and sunset when the light is breaking through. All of that being said, I much, much higher recommend getting out to areas in northern Japan, like Nikko, which is, you know, kind of midway up right before hitting the Tohoku area. Places like Aomori, or even going up as far as Hokkaido, these are wonderful spots. A really, really undervalued area in Japan is the entire coast along the Sea of Japan. Now, one of the reasons for this, very, very obviously, it's just the lack of accessibility. It's far and it's difficult to get out there. And while the other coastal end of Japan has been heavily developed in terms of both roadway and railway, the Sea of Japan side tends to be a little more of a challenge in terms of general transportation. Not that much more, but just getting out there is a challenge. Now, this is another beautiful area. The point of all of this being, there is there is really no short of amazing places to watch the autumn leaves. Again, Hokkaido, spectacular. Nikko, spectacular. Heck, even if you can get up to Nagano, that is another spectacular place. Now, along with all of this, a great coupling of this, if you truly want to enjoy Japan, is doing a little bit of hiking. Now, you can, as I said before, you can go to places like, you know, the Mount Takao, or you can go out to Ibaraki. There's Japan, I've definitely covered this before. Japan is over 70% mountain. So you're not going to run out of spaces to do some hiking. It has everything from beginner mountains to bigger mountains like the Alps. But outside of all of this, I wanted to share just a little bit more in terms of, you know, the festivities. Now, one thing that I totally forgot about, I'm recording this at the end of September, and September is a spectacular month for what Japanese call skimi. Skimi is basically moon viewing, because typically it is a month that, you know, has very clear skies. You get a lot of, you know, you get the gorgeous full moon, and there are lots of snacks built around this as well. There's like, you know, dango, they're little, I guess, rice balls, rice mochi ball things. Why have I never explained dango in English? Why am I struggling with this so much? Dango are these little rice mochi ball things. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, because my explanation is clearly just out of this world wonderful, maybe Google them and check them out. There's a lot of food around this time. In fact, I typically don't eat a lot of McDonald's. I definitely used to, but lately I don't, except for guaranteed once a year when I will hit up McDonald's, and that is for the tsukimi burger. Every single year, McDonald's Japan does this tsukimi burger. It's got burger with this special sauce on it. It's got an egg on it. It's got some bacon. It's really good burger. Now, burger sidebars aside, there is a lot of good food, especially, as I said, in October. Now, Hokkaido Food Festival is a great one. See, autumn is a time, Japan's very, very seasonal in terms of food, if you didn't already know this, which I'm assuming that you did. Japan celebrates food in each season, and some of the best food that you can get is seafood. Now, the Hokkaido Food Festival, believe it or not, you don't have to go all the way out to Hokkaido for. Nope, it is held in Yoyogi Park right in Tokyo. I think it has like over 100 vendors, and it's somewhere at the beginning of October. I think this year it's somewhere around the 3rd or 4th, going up until I think the 5th or 6th. Now, if you can make it up to Hokkaido, obviously get up there and try some of the food. A really, really weirdly obvious one that I've somehow just managed to not mention at all, if you are interested in it, obviously the Rugby World Cup. In fact, the Rugby World Cup may even be what brought you to this podcast and wondering what else you can do in October. So yeah, the Rugby World Cup, if you don't know, is happening in Japan right now, the very moment that I record this. And so there's a lot of stuff going on related to rugby. Again, if you are coming out to Tokyo, food related, I believe there is even a ramen show. I have done entire podcasts, so I will skip over the topic of Halloween, but that's obviously a thing here in Japan. One more thing that people don't really think about is fireworks. Yes. When you think of fireworks in Japan, if you're like me, you instantly associate it with summer, because Japan is synonymous with summer fireworks. These, like, summer and fireworks, these things just go together beautifully, but they are not the only fireworks. You see, as we come to the end of summer and we get into fall, there are a few fireworks still scattered throughout random places. So if you take a look online, you just look at, you know, Japan fireworks and, you know, the rough time period that you'll be there, usually something will come up. A really, really good one for the beginning of October, I think somewhere around the weekend of the 5th, is the Tamagawa fireworks. They're pretty big and they're beautiful. In fact, fireworks festivals aren't the only festivals that you're going to find in October. In fact, the entire country of Japan has a variety of different types of festivals throughout the entire month of October. For example, if you are into kitchenware or something, I believe there's an Osaka Kitchenware Street Festival at the beginning of October in the first weekend or something like that. A really great one to see in the area of Aomori in northern Japan is the Tambo art. Now, this one is a lot of fun, and I'm going to do my best to explain it in a really clear and simple manner. Tambo art, in Japanese, rice fields. Now, these here, once a year around this time, as the, you know, as the rice is harvested and the color starts to change and everything, a lot of areas will convert their rice fields into art. So if you look up Tambo art, you'll find this beautiful, beautiful, like, set of photos on Google. I think one of the most famous ones is a rice field that has been converted into, like, showing something from Star Wars. One of the most famous is up in Aomori. I would love to actually be able to go up and just show that this year, but there are others around Japan. Again, if we're going more central Japan, Takayama has the Takayama Autumn Festival. Now, while the Tambo kind of ends at the beginning, this is more like a mid-month festival. Again, for another like mid-month festival, there is a Onomichi Lantern Festival in Hiroshima. And just around the corner in Hyogo, there's even something I believe is called like Nada no Kenka Festival. Now, Kenka Matsuri or Kenka Festivals are actually festivals where they fight. This is a real thing. If you don't know about it, I highly recommend looking it up. They have mikoshi, these portable shrines, and they will kind of bang them together and fight. But people in the crowds, in more often than not in these festivals, will actually end up in full-fledged fights, and it's absolutely insane. They have them all over Japan, but for the most part, if you I would recommend checking out something like Tokyo Weekender or Japan Cheapo, or there's no shortage of sites that will show you things to do. Now, one that people don't think of, an unexpected one that kind of bleeds into November in case you're going to be here in November, is Japan really goes above and beyond with the light festivals, or the winter illuminations, as they like to call it. Now, these are, again, scattered all throughout Japan. If you are going to be in Tokyo, especially, there's a great deal of them right in the city. I think Shiodome near Shinbashi has a fantastic one. I think there's even a really big one out in Shizuoka. I've never been there, though, so I can't really say much about it. But over the years, these unfortunately have started to decrease a bit. That's right. We're going into a sidebar because I've just been like machine gunning these tips and ideas. But the thing is, this is kind of an important one. When I first came to Japan back in around 2007 to move here, at that time, it didn't matter where you went in Tokyo, pretty much everywhere had some form of winter illuminations. They go up somewhere around the end of October, maybe middle of November, and they stick around till usually January or February. Now, I could go anywhere from Midtown to Roppongi to Ueno, you name it, everywhere had lights up. But for various reasons, after the earthquake especially, as a cost-cutting measure and as an energy-saving measure, a lot of these have kind of started to dwindle, and the ones that do exist have really decreased in size and scale. And I really do believe that as we move forward as a people and a culture, that these will continue to dwindle even more. So if you're going to be in Japan during this time, take the opportunity and see if you cannot find yourself one of the Japanese illumination areas. Again, usually closer to the end of October, beginning of November. And just interjecting with a gentle reminder here that if you have booked an Airbnb for your time in Japan, make sure that you confirm your reservation. Japan in the recent past has had some trouble with Airbnbs, and I wouldn't want anybody to be running into any trouble. All of that being said, now I want to drop in a little tiny bit of a hidden gem, maybe two, maybe three, who knows. So there is one or two spots that I would almost definitely, definitely recommend if you want to do a day trip outside of Tokyo, but you don't know where to go. Now, when you think of day trips outside of Tokyo, you instantly probably think of places like Kamakura or Chinatown and Yokohama and stuff like that. These are great day trips. But I would actually say, don't go north, Don't go south. Okay, maybe go north. We'll come back to that. Head east or west. Now, on the west side of Tokyo, there is so much hidden gems, nature, and excitement. You will get some of the best views of all of Mount Fuji that you'll get anywhere. Fantastic areas like the one I mentioned before, Sagamihara. You can go down to an area like Odawara, which has one of the only castles in this part of Japan. You can hit areas like Akirunoshi, which by far is one of my favorite spots in Western Tokyo. I think I even did a video on West Tokyo where I showcased a beautiful little two-story cabin that I got to stay in the area of Akirunoshi. There was a gorgeous little semi, like mini suspension style bridge that crossed over a river through a wooded area. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful place to stay. Now, this is the more obvious out of the two. The weirdly hidden in plain sight gem that almost nobody thinks to do is Chiba. Chiba, which is the area almost directly to the right and maybe kind of south of Tokyo, is home to the Narita International Airport, but is also home to a great deal of nature and a great number of coastal drives, hidden little spots. One of my highly recommended ones that takes a little time to get to. It's definitely within a day trip, but it's going to eat up a lot of transportation time, so I would recommend staying overnight, is an area called Minamiboso, or just south of there, Tateyama. This whole area has a bunch of little peninsulas, and it's got gorgeous ocean views. It is a really, really good spot to watch the sunset. In fact, I could spend the next 20 minutes of the podcast very, very easily recommending different places that you could stay within the area of Chiba, and just nobody goes to Chiba because Chiba is thought of as more like, oh, it's that bed town. It's the place where, you know, people live out in the countryside next to Tokyo. For many, it's seen as being about as exciting as Saitama, I guess. Speaking of Saitama, the area of Chichibu is a beautiful spot, especially in the fall. The mountains of Chichibu and all the parks that you can go out to there, oh, it is Saitama, which is not seen as the most exciting place in all of, you know, Japan, but the area of Chichibu is absolutely gorgeous. Going up a little more into, for example, Gunma, Takasaki, or, you know, if we're talking about Gunma, I did that Doai station, the underground station, that was also in Gunma. And then going up a little more up to Niigata, like if you were to go from Tokyo to Chichibu, out to Gunma, and then finally up to Niigata, and then maybe loop back around to Nagano and work your way down to Gifu from there. A question that I get asked at least once every 2 or 3 months is, you know, if you were to run a tour in Japan, what kind of stuff would you recommend? What would be your recommended route? What would be your recommended places? And if I had maybe 5 or 6 days to do some traveling, and I really wanted to get a feel for that like core area of Japan and still get a lot of variety while still getting nature, I would definitely start in Tokyo, get that real city feel, get that, you know, just that atmosphere, the energy, and I would instantly get out of Tokyo and head up to Chichibu. It would give you a beautiful juxtaposition between the mountains and forested areas, beautiful winding roads, whether you are in a car, bus, or train that go along the side of the mountain and give you some gorgeous views. And then I would go a little more north, as we talked about just a moment ago, hit up the area of Gunma and Doai Station, because it will just give you a feel that you otherwise just cannot get. There's something about that place that is truly exciting and unique, And then I would go straight up to Niigata. And one of the reasons I would hit Niigata is because there are some wonderful both cityscapes and mountainscapes in that area. We did a video where we were going along the coastline and somewhere, I think it was a lot closer to Toyama, but the space between Niigata and Toyama, there's a little area there called Joetsu. And Joetsu, just the drive along the coast, was absolutely spectacular. You get to see some beautiful, beautiful sunsets. And then making your way down into Nagano, or maybe even going out a little further to Toyama, and then making your way down to Takayama and the Gifu area. This would be my recommended. And then even from there, if we were to keep going, I would probably recommend to continue on down to Nagoya. Spend a little bit of time in the Nagoya area, but get out of there pretty quick and head down into the area of Iga or Nabari in Mie Prefecture. Now, this spot here is one of the areas where ninja originated, and it is just rich with culture and beautiful, beautiful buildings, by the way. And the people you will meet there are some of the nicest people you will meet in all of Japan. It's also incredibly close, just a couple hours ride away from Osaka. You can make your way down to Osaka and Kobe, probably, you know, do a day in each. And then from there, once you've gone to Kobe, you can actually hop right across. There's a set of islands there that will lead you right into Kagawa in Shikoku. Actually, Tokushima. I think you'll land in a place called Naruto, which, yes, the place is called Naruto. And then you can either head south down to Kochi, or you can head across the island to Ehime. And now I'm really just planning my next road trip more than anything. I should probably stop giving away all my secrets here. By the way, for those of you listening here on the podcast, another road trip is in the works. This road trip, we are going to be going a little more north and hitting a couple places I've been and a couple places I have never been. And we're really, really looking forward to it. If there's anything, if you were a viewer of the Unnamed Adventure, and there's anything that you're like, oh, I really enjoyed this, or I would have liked to see more of this, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or drop something in on the comments section of one of my videos, and I will see what I can incorporate in our road trip. I guess that's the word I'm looking for, road trip. That being said, in the description box of this podcast episode, I'm going to link a video which kind of, I guess, gave birth to the last podcast episode. Also, to all the new listeners to the podcast, allow me to welcome you. Really glad to have you here. One thing that means the world to me is if you have a spare 30 seconds today and you're willing to jump over to iTunes and leave a little bit of a review for the podcast, that absolutely positively makes my day. So thank you so much. There's definitely more I could fit in here, but for now, I want to keep it semi-brief at least and just stick with the basics. I hope you've gotten some value out of this episode. Again, if you have, a review would mean the world. I hope that no matter what you're doing for the rest of the day, whether it be morning or night, that today is a spectacular day for you. And you guys know, I will talk to you again real soon.